Hello, short film fans, and welcome to another edition of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. We are very, very excited. I was at the Aesthetica Short Film Festival earlier this month, and while there, I ran into the person who's going to be joining me on the pod today. She is an actress, a writer, producer, and a director, and she is the driving force behind the short film Milk, the review of which we put out last week. Make sure you read the review, and there are also some links in the review for you to head over to the Aesthetica online platform so you can watch those films online as well. Highly recommended. But if you will join me in welcoming Catherine Press to the show. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us. How have you been?
I am very well. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you. And just looking at some of the things you've been involved with, you have been incredibly busy. So thank you for finding the time to do it. I was really, really excited to talk to you, especially, well, after having met you initially and having a great chat at the festival itself, and then subsequently watching Milk. I was quite adamant that we were going to sit down and have a conversation because I was absolutely blown away by the film, firstly. And secondly, just kind of looking into your background, where you started, the kinds of things you've had to pursue. You just seem to have had an amazing journey as a performing artist and also as a driving force behind the scenes as well. Before we get into all of that, and there's a lot to cover, can you just give us a little brief overview of the film that, that brought us together in the first place, Milk? Can you just tell us a little bit about that and what it's about?
Sure. So Milk is a short film, a drama about a young single mother bringing her son home after an attempted suicide. He's a very young son as well. He's only about 13. So yeah, it's an intense film, but it's had a lovely reception. So we're quite proud of it.
Having sat down and watched it myself, it is certainly something that that is important, needs to be covered, needs to be addressed. From a filmmaking perspective, it's kind of a masterclass in tension building. And additionally, it really shines a light on some of the alternative perspectives of issues like this as well. Obviously, the way in which it affects the person who's dealing with the issues that's pushing them to consider or attempt suicide, but also the knock-on effects of the people around them, especially the people that care about them the most, parents and things like that. What was it that that turned you towards this particular project and this story?
Well, I should say at this point, I didn't write or direct Milk. I produced it, which sounds so bizarre. I produced Milk. I have to just get that out of the way. But yes, the writer and director is Adam Etheridge, a good friend of mine. We're both based here in Bristol. It was, I suppose, a passion project of his. I'd been aware that he kind of had it on the back burner for a little while. And then he came to me and just said, you know, I need a producer. I think not it really expecting me to say yes, because he knew I was busy with plenty of things going on. But yeah, I couldn't really say no. I think it's just such, I mean, yeah, what you said about our masterclass, I mean, that's very flattering, and I will pass that on to Adam, in short filmmaking. But yeah, he intended to make something that said something very clearly. He wanted it to be clear, and he wanted it to be an effective short film, in the sense of it is just a moment, you know, it's just a tiny little moment in this massive story, this massive journey that these characters are going on, and also a different perspective, as you say, you know, it is from the mother's perspective. There's a lot from the sufferer's perspective, and this was just something he wanted to explore with this film. Yeah.
One of the things that I really admired about it is that while it is from the mother's perspective, largely, it doesn't sideline the actual sufferer. It doesn't sideline the person contemplates suicide at all. And to a certain extent, makes the audience guess as to why they've gone down this road or why they've contemplated the things they've contemplated, and doesn't seek to simply explain, well, when a person attempt suicide, this is what they think. It doesn't do any of that, and it's very important that it doesn't. And as you say, it focuses on those moments, and I think it's kind of that coverage of those beat to beat moments of things that as a parent you have to consider, and all of the kind of tension and stress that comes along with that, kind of walking that tightrope of, I want to make things as normal as possible for my child, but at the same time, I have to be aware of every potential threat.
Exactly.
And I now have to start considering things that I didn't think of twice as a potential threat to them now, and things like that. It's really interesting the ways in which Adam focused on the little things that put you in that mindset. I can imagine it would have been a very difficult project to push forward, to undertake, and to really get right, frankly. How did you as producer and Adam as writer and director approach striking that balance?
Yeah, so as soon as I came on board, I thought, you know, we want to speak to charities about this, just to make sure we're getting it right, you know, in a purely accurate sense of what would the process be, you know, once this has happened, what are the steps back? And also just, you know, in terms of being sensitive and treating a very delicate subject appropriately. So yeah, we reached out to Papyrus, who work with the families and also the sufferers of young suicide. So this is kind of like a younger people's charity. And then also the Samaritans, who most people will know. And yeah, it was really lovely. I mean, they were both so helpful. The Samaritans have a very well-developed media kind of pack, so that they, you know, exactly what they recommend is okay to show and what really shouldn't be shown in terms of causality. Obviously, they've got lots of research on the stats and the figures. And then Papyrus, you know, perhaps some of the more kind of individual perspectives of parents of children who had gone through this. It was a really key aspect of our prep, definitely. And the script did change a little. There were certain details that we ended up rewriting, and, you know, or at least, you know, discussing how do we go about showing this but not being too explicit. It's moments, you know, when she is going up to the door, this family, this mother and son live in a council flat, very high up, and, you know, just a moment when she approaches the door and just, you know, quietly removes the key. Hopefully that's enough. You know, we don't need to be graphic, we don't need to be, you know, too on the nose with it, but that in itself, you know, it's just all contributing to this feeling that for these two, you know, nothing will ever be the same after this. She'll never be able to look at her house, the outside world, anything in the same way again.
And it's heartbreaking in that sort of snapshot of how do I protect my child from essentially the world, it seems like, or it feels like. That while, you know, hopefully they'll get to a point where the way in which they manage it, you know, they kind of get used to that process, but the process never goes away.
No,
and,
exactly.
And yeah, and the way that that's kind of put across in the film is done quite sensitively, and as much as it is kind of heart pounding at times, striking that balance must have been artistically difficult. And I think it's probably important that as a producer that you were there to kind of guide the practical aspects of which areas to focus on or how to approach the story or which parts of each character sort of mental state you tried to convey. How hands-on were you in that kind of a process?
Well, so interestingly, we were shooting this in, I want to say, June 2021. So we still had COVID measures to think about.
Right.
So we actually had to be very careful with numbers on set. We were shooting in, you know, a real life council flat, pretty cramped, not that much space. So we had to minimize people on set. So actually, in the scenes, we're relatively few. You know, we had the DP, we had the sound recordist, and Adam and the two actors, and everyone else was kind of actually in the next door flat. So we had to, that was something we had to kind of to wrestle with to some extent, I suppose. But yeah, I think a lot of it came down to casting, you know, casting some two wonderful actors. And then also I think it was just Adam very carefully thinking about, okay, how much do we want the audience to know? How much do we want the mother to know? You know, there's a big question that hangs over it, you know, for a mother of a 13-year-old, perhaps even 12-year-old kid, you know, why on earth? What could have brought you to that point at that age? And how would you have even thought to go about that? You know, looking back at when I was that age, I can't begin to fathom how someone arrived at that point at that age. So yeah, there was a particular moment when, you know, she's kind of on the threshold, having just brought him back, and almost like have you know, the word can't come out. She's kind of wanting to say why, you know, how, like, but so I think, yeah, that just, it, I mean, it's honestly, it is hugely down to Adam. Just the way that he was so clear about, right, okay, this is where she is, this is where he is, and then just, as I say, just casting wonderful people who could deliver that on screen. So yeah, I mean, my job was easy. I just had to let them get on with it, I suppose, when it came to the shoot. And as I say, sadly, I couldn't be, you know, in and amongst it. But I didn't need to be, because they were fab.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. I mean, a lot of the time it does come down to the team you assemble, how they all approach it and how they all invest in it. In terms of, because, and we'll get into this in a minute, in terms of the projects that you've had to kind of guide and shepherd, where does this kind of sit in terms of difficulty level? It's a very difficult subject matter to address, obviously.
Yeah.
So you have that kind of aspect to it. But from a logistical perspective, it takes place in something like three locations, has two actors, really, or maybe three actors.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a balance in terms of its difficulty level, but overall, kind of where does it sit in terms of a challenge for you as a producer?
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper, it looks relatively simple, you know, production-wise, for the reasons that you said. But Adam was keen to try something in the last scene, which involves, I mean, I don't know, can I give a spoiler? Can I say what happens in the final scene?
It's entirely up to you. I've avoided spoilers in the review because it's not out yet. But
perhaps I won't. But there's a long shot that he wanted to do. Actually, when we filmed it, it was 5 minutes, which is a very, very long shot. And we ended up cutting that down slightly in the edit. But he was adamant that it was in terms of building the tension. It needed to happen in real time. So that logistically was a challenge. You know, having come on board as producer, and then Adam kind of says, oh, by the way, we want to do this long shot. I was like, oh, right, okay, you didn't mention that before. Thanks. but no, it was, I mean, that was fascinating because we basically set aside a whole half day to do that. So we actually filmed, I think it was a Friday and a Saturday, and then came back on a Sunday, which we hoped, you know, very early on a Sunday as well, in order to get a quiet environment. And we had loads of extra crew. We had, you know, kind of extra third ADs and extra runners kind of, you know, giving cues for when certain things were to happen and when people would start walking and all that kind of thing. We had basically a traveling camera that traveled almost for the full 5 minutes. So the DP was operating that, and then we had, I think, four grips that we just said, can you just come along and just carry a camera, it'll be really easy. And they basically had to run with a camera, you know, and kind of pass it between them in order to get the next bit and then pass it back, and it was choreographed. So yeah, that was quite something. Of course, I'm glad we did it, but certain times I was like, I mean, do we really need to, like, is there not another option of doing it? And hopefully it does, you know, it does create that tension on the screen, and it was worth it. I suppose the other big challenge was finding that key location of the council flat, obviously, because, as I mentioned, it was still, you know, slightly COVID sensitive kind of time. So finding someone who was up for giving up their flat, their home, for one day, but a long day, and, you know, letting just a film crew run riot, you know, that was difficult. I put a shout out on Facebook and had a few people come back, and more than one, then, having realized quite what would be involved, said, actually, maybe not. So yeah, we were very fortunate that we found somewhere in the end with, you know, an accommodating homeowner, and just had the right things in terms of the space and the setup to create the shots that we wanted. So yeah, once we had that sorted, I felt a lot a lot better about about how things were shaping up, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess as a producer as well, you know, it's an entirely different discipline to how you entered the creative space in the first place, really, isn't it? Because, you know, your initial foray into the arts, I believe, began with ballet. Is that correct?
And that's right. Yeah. I mean, I went to full-time ballet school. So that was my world. That was everything until I graduated from dance school, really, at 18. Yeah. And then tried to learn how to become a normal person. But I honestly never thought I'd go from that to doing what I do now. But I'm glad I did.
it's an amazing journey, really. I mean, so how did you then transition from ballet into acting?
So, I mean, the reason I stopped dancing was because I just had such a lot of trouble with injury. So, you know, I just couldn't really kind of let go and actually enjoy doing what I was doing anymore. So I thought, well, what does one do at this age? Okay, I guess people go to university. That's a thing. So I applied to university, ended up studying art history, which I wasn't hugely interested in, frankly, but, you know, it was a means to an end. And I ended up doing all the drama society stuff. So my poor parents, every time I rang home, it was like, oh, I'm just going off to rehearsal. So having thought, oh, thank God, now she's going down a sensible path, we don't have to worry. I was just acting and did all the societies and, you know, went to Edinburgh Fringe and did all of that.
Yeah.
And was very lucky to actually get an agent out of one of those shows, someone that just came to watch, decided I was all right, and signed me up. So I started working in my final year at university.
And from there, you seem to have kind of gone from strength to strength. You know, you've had roles in things like Foyle's War. You've performed alongside people like Chiwetel Ejiofor and John Goodman. And what blew me away is, you know, you were present at Project Rebirth for the birth of Captain America
always go loopy for, and I had no lines. You know, I was on set for quite a long time. That's because it just, you know, those kind of films take so long. But I was just pushing a trolley and though injecting Captain America with the super serum that makes him a superhero. So, you know, I did create a superhero. That's all, you know, just nothing. It's fine.
Without you, the Avengers would be without a leader. So
it is true.
You at this point are my complete claim to fame. So fantastic.
I'm okay with that.
But yeah, I mean, as you well know, the world of acting on stage and in film, especially in the UK, can be very much feast or famine. You know, you can have roles coming in left and right for 6 months and then nothing for the next six. How do you as an actor navigate that, and did that play a part in you moving towards the filmmaking end of things?
It was the main reason, I suppose. I think I like doing things. And I've got a brain like most people. So I, you know, just waiting for the phone to ring every day just wasn't good for me, you know, mental health wise, just wasn't good. My dad happens to work at universities. He happened to be working at one that did a film MA. So I thought, I'll just go and live with dad for a year and do that. And I'm so glad I did, because I tried a bit of everything and suddenly felt, again, bizarrely, having already said, you know, going from dancing to becoming a human, I think acting, it is so difficult to keep a sense of kind of, I am an adult person with, any kind of ability, intelligent, you know, you are just a commodity, you know, please like me, please cast me. You just have so little control. And so to then suddenly step into projects when, oh, I can make a shoot happen and, you know, I can write something that maybe we can film. It was a bit like coming back to life, really, being kind of, you know, oh, you know, this is possible. And suddenly, I wasn't having to wait for other people to think I was right or good enough and all that kind of thing. So I started off producing, I think. In some ways, it kind of satisfied that, you know, kind of busy brain part of me that wanted something to do. And I actually quite liked all the organizing and maybe less so budgets. That was less fun. But all the, you know, kind of getting a crew together and making something happen. And actually, to some extent, all the kind of, you know, the ticks and checks and form filling, you know, it was satisfying to me in a certain way. And then, more recently segued into writing and directing. I think once I built up the confidence to think that I had anything at all worth saying.
It's an interesting path to go down. And the way that you've approached it is quite interesting because it's not simply a vehicle for you to give yourself roles. You've assembled teams, you've created roles for other actors. Quite often you haven't been in the films you've produced at all. Mm. I mean, Milk being a prime example. Was there sort of an unexpected kind of payoff to generating a project that you're not necessarily in front of the camera for, that creates opportunities for other people that have been in the same position you've been in?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think there are a couple of my friends and colleagues who would laugh at you saying that, because since I've started writing and directing, I've been in all my films. And much as I say, it's just because I'm free labor, it's fine. They're like, really? So anyway, we'll set that aside. But that's very nice of you to say. Yeah, absolutely. I think having been an actor, you know, you are so much more sensitive to how an actor feels. And, you know, if you're conducting an auditions, you know, I always make sure I get back to people. I always, you know, not necessarily explain why they didn't get it, but, you know, just try and be as transparent and kind of human about it as possible. Because, yeah, it's just, and then when, you know, once they're on set, always bearing them in mind and what they need. And if, you know, I need to go and We had obviously a young actor on Milk. So I went and just said hi to him and his mum when they arrived at the hotel, rather than just, you know, the first time they met me being on set. Yeah. And we had kind of a lot of back and forth, just checking he was fine and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's just about being a human, I think. And I can understand. It was a real surprise to me at first, actually, as an actor and then as a filmmaker, quite how often directors and crews in general kind of just, you know, forget that the actors are humans. You know, they're coming on and they're just another part of the picture. And that does make sense to me now, because I can kind of understand there are so many aspects that go into it. You know, you've been doing camera tests and things, you know, they do just kind of slot in at the end. But yeah, to me, the direction I've come from, you know, the story is about people and the human, you know, heart of it. So if we're not kind of thinking about how the actors are doing, I don't know. Anyway, it's just, yeah, it's something that I think doesn't take too much effort. And yeah, I like to think, you know, I've got friends who I've brought back a few times on projects, and I'm developing, well, in pre-production for one at the moment. We're shooting next week. I've been working with Adam Courting, who's one of my leads. This is his third film he'll have been in of mine. And we actually decided, let's really just see what happens if we have time to workshop this a bit. And so just over Zoom, you know, for the last 2 months, I think, just we've been meeting weekly pretty much, and just talking about the characters and trying different things. And, oh, what about this? And what about that? Just because, you know, partly selfishly as a director, I've not had a chance to work in that way before, but also because I wanted to see how that kind of enriched, you know, both of our experiences. I'm playing the other part, so it was, you know, it kind of just what can we get out of working that way, and giving him that opportunity, I suppose, to really contribute and be part of a lot of the decision making. So
yeah,
actors are cool. Be nice to actors.
Actors are cool, and absolutely be nice to actors.
Yeah,
so very cool. And it's good that you haven't veered away from acting altogether. And in as much as I did point out that as a producer, you haven't created loads of opportunities for yourself.
No.
As a writer director, as you mentioned, you've been quite a few. I mean, first one that comes to mind, obviously, is Help, I've Stolen Amy Adams' Nose.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, isn't it? It is a mouthful. Every time you stumble over it, it's hard.
But very difficult to forget, which is the point. And
the point. Yep, brilliant. You saw right through me.
So what exactly prompted that one? Because it's just such an out there kind of concept. What was the genesis of that?
Well, I think the reason for doing it was because we filmed actually about a month after we shot Milk. So I think I was almost writing this, you know, kind of coming home from shooting Milk and then actually writing this. But yeah, it was Milk and also another short film about mental health. Called Reaching For, which is about OCD, you know, really quite intense short films. And that plus just, you know, aftermath of a global pandemic, I just wanted to do something silly. And I wanted to kind of let you know, some of my friends work on Something Silly. It actually ended up being a lot bigger production than I thought because more people just wanted to climb aboard. I mean, we had no money, you know, the production was about 400 quid, I think we ended up spending. But just people like doing it and they were up for coming along for free, which just blew my mind. You know, I'd never written and directed anything before, but it was lovely. So it is actually based on a true story. It says that in the film, and it is based on a true story. When I was acting, in fact, before I was even acting, so I was a ballet student, and sometimes they'd use some of us as extras, you know, if they wanted dancers in the background. And I was in the background, and Amy Adams came up to me on a set. She said, "I'm so sorry, I've been staring at you." And I was like, "Okay, have you? That's weird." But apparently she had, "Because you're the spitting image of my sister. Can I have a photo?" So yeah, we had a photo and had a nice chat and she was very lovely. So yeah, it's kind of, it just grew out of that. And I think I was on a walk with my mum because I remember her suggesting, you know, I was saying, "Oh, I just want to, you know, maybe I should just write something, make something." And I can't remember quite, I mean, I feel like she had quite a big part to play in just bringing up that idea. Well, what about, you know, just something about that, like something really silly. Anyway, yeah, I went home and kind of wrote it straight away. And then we made it about a month later. So, yeah, it's very silly. It's very silly. But we had a lot of fun and people seem to be enjoying watching it, which is amazing. Again, kind of blows my mind a bit. You know, we had such fun making it and people liked it. So I'm making more weird comedy films at the moment.
Excellent. And it seems to have been an unexpected kind of catharsis, I guess. As you mentioned, you've been doing a lot of heavier projects.
Definitely.
And this kind of just being something kind of silly seems to have just attracted a whole bunch of people. You know, I mean, quite often with short film, especially because budgets are so tight, it's difficult to get the size of crew you need or the locations you need or this. It seems like you had kind of the opposite experience with this one. And just because it was so crazy and silly that everyone wanted to kind of jump on board.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, I mean, Michael Maloney, who plays my dad in it, was a friend. You know, I just said, you know, I'm going to make something stupid. He's like, "Yeah, I'll do it." It's like, what? You haven't heard me talk about what you've got to do. And then I put him in a shell suit and, you know, maybe he regrets it. But yeah, I think people were just really, just having missed for so long, you know, being on a set, I think that really did work to my favor. And then I think having a lot of fun making that film, very, you know, very lucky in that people wanted to come back and make another. So I'm on my third with a very similar team. The third one is what we're shooting next week. So, and I think, you know, like I said, Reaching For, which I also wrote, was very, it was intense. And, you know, I made that, I think it was completed about the same time as Nose was. But yeah, Nose just seemed to, I don't know, just people just enjoyed it. And it was just so nice to just make a film that people enjoy. You know, there's so much, God, awfulness that's happening in the world right now and so much that people are dealing with. Some silliness, like there's no harm in that. And no, I guess, absolutely. You know, there's a little message at the heart of it about, you know, being yourself and not being trying to be someone else. But I mean, take it or leave it. But, you know, it's essentially colourful and fun and just mad. So frankly, you know, if that's what people enjoy, I enjoy making it. My crews enjoy making it. My actor friends enjoy acting in it. Then why wouldn't I make more of that kind of thing? So
absolutely.
That's what's happening at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And just off the back of just those two projects, and obviously there have been more, and as you say, you're filming another one, you say next week.
Yeah, in a week. That's terrifying. Yes.
The fact that they're so different and you are writer and director of all of these, it seems like you're not necessarily drawn to a particular type of story or a particular type of project, but you're not afraid to tackle something that either may be a bit out there or might be a bit heavy. But is there a particular type of project that you're drawn to, or is there anything that kind of influences what draws you to a project?
Well, I guess part of it is, you know, as an actor, no one wants to be pigeonholed. No one wants to be typecast. We all are. I understand why, but I think maybe that was part of it. You know, why do I have to be that kind of a director or that kind of a producer? You know, I like telling stories. I guess probably female-led projects I've been drawn to for obvious reasons. And yeah, other than that, honestly, it's just about powerful stories with engaging characters. And, it, you know, that's sometimes funny characters and it's sometimes not that funny. You know, I've never yet done an action movie or a horror film, but I wouldn't say no if it was a good one, you know. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, I am making comedy films at the moment, but I've also got an idea for a, you know, a quite a serious film that I'm developing, you know, having talked to a charity. So, you know, we'll just see how things go. I suppose the only difference there is that because the scope of that is, you know, it's quite a powerful subject.
Yeah.
I would want longer to develop it. I would probably need some more funding behind it to develop it and then to get it made. And it would also probably be a bit longer. Whereas I can easily make a silly comedy. The one that I've got in post, which is almost completed, is 5.5 minutes.
Right.
You know, and that was, again, like very, very low budget. And I don't know, I felt like it was easier to ask friends to get on board because it's this fun film and we'll have fun making it, and which we did. I like doing it all, basically. It's a long way of saying I like everything.
Absolutely. I mean, it's quite cool just kind of seeing people pursue projects that are so wildly different from each other. And for you as both director and actor, how have you approached sort of the learning curve of then having to direct your own performance?
Well, firstly, having a very good and very lovely DP. Nick Wilding has been my DP on all three of the films I've directed so far. It's certainly, there has been a progression, you know, in when we were doing Amy's Nose, there was a lot of times when I'd kind of have to go, oh God, I meant to actually look at the monitor and I meant to actually make a decision about this, which I just, you know, I just wasn't used to. So that kind of thing, I've just got more, simply just more used to the hopping between the two roles, and more confident, I suppose, as well, in terms of, oh, I know what that means when they're talking about that now, and I can actually have something to say about it. But yeah, I think it just comes down to preparation. And for each of the films that we've made, I think I've been more involved in perhaps the camera side and the shot listing side, rather than being kind of, oh, I want it to look like this, and then you go away and make it look like that. You know, we were actually just camera testing yesterday. And, you know, I'm beginning to actually understand how to use a camera, kind of. It's just about making all those decisions ahead of time so that Nick and other members of the team know what we're going for, know what the kind of the tone is, the, you know, just the general kind of feel that we're after. And then also making sure I've got some kind of production support. So I've actually produced all three films as well. When it comes to the shoot, you know, making sure that I have a wonderful production manager or just a group of production people who can just take that weight off. So I'm not having to think at the same time as I'm in makeup, oh, hang on, wait, what about the catering and when's that arriving and, you know, all that kind of thing. Setting that all up ahead of time, front loading the prep so that I can do as little as possible, I think, on the set and make decisions and be with the actors as well. But we already know what we're going for. I think that's the main thing.
I have learned. Right.
Yes.
Having that kind of support system that allows you to kind of be on top of it in that way. Does that then help in terms of finding the confidence and the motivation to keep going for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing? It seems like you've got quite a few things in the pipeline as well.
Definitely. I think that was my big realization on when we shot Nose, was like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm directing it, but, you know, a director isn't alone. That's the joy of being a director, is that you're just kind of guiding an amazing team a bit. You know, you're really not having to take that much, like, well, you are, you know, I are responsible, but you're, you know, that kind of level of responsibility that I just thought, oh, I'll never be able to do that. Having always been, you know, told what to do, you know, choreographed or directed as a dancer and actor. It just to have those people there and people who want to make your mad ideas. That's just so cool. And you have fun together. I mean, that's, you know, in between my acting jobs, that's what I missed, you know, just being with people on a set. And it's magic, you know, you're just, even when you're being ridiculous and just mucking around, that kind of feeling you have, for me, that's my favorite place. So just the more I can do, the better. So yeah, I've got other projects in development in various stages of funding, competitions and things. Just like having ideas and just seeing what happens. I also am a big believer in putting lots of things out there, and then, you know, not all of them are going to stick, but some of them will. And then you just go with that one, and then maybe another one will pop up later. And I think just be open and put good energy out there. That sounds very, very frothy, awesome. But you know what I mean.
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, yeah, if nothing else, in this kind of field, you have to maintain enthusiasm and you have to maintain positivity.
You can't wait until you someone gives you $10 million to make your feature. If you're not enjoying, you know, the process, then, you know, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, it's true. And having, you know, spoken to people like yourself and Paul Holbrook, I believe, you know, as well.
Both from Bristol.
Right. And exactly. As mentioned, Adam Etheridge is from Bristol as well.
He's also from Bristol. Right? Yes. Yes.
Right. It's quite a town. So basically, I mean, a lot of what tends to come up there is just the necessity to just move on to the next thing and to just keep going. And those are the things that really do stick with me as I find great films and great filmmakers is the through line is just, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
And that's great. But it does also then open up the whole other discipline and the whole other sticking point of, okay, so how do we fund it? And
of course,
you know, how do we get it all out there? So I guess these are now the headaches that you as producer and writer and director now have to deal with. So how do you go about approaching that, and what has helped most in terms of getting the funding you need for the projects that you have worked on?
My first project out of doing my MA, I was very lucky to basically just walk into a project that was ready to go and that was funded by the BFI. So Tia Salisbury, another Bristol-based filmmaker, wonderful. Mm. She just had this project that was, you know, ready to apply with. She was ready to apply with and just needed a producer. So I just kind of hopped on and it just happened. So that, I mean, I know I realize how long people, you know, how many times people apply for BFI funding and don't get it. So it was a very easy opportunity for me to work on a funded project. I mean, those kind of schemes, you know, they take time and, you know, you've got to wait months to hear back. For Milk, I was very lucky. We were very lucky. So Adam is the founder of a commercial production house called Aspect Film and Video in Bristol, and uses his own commercial kind of, you know, earnings to fund his drama projects. So he actually came to me and said, right, you can have 10 grand for production, which, you know, would just, you know, doesn't happen. So I'm aware. And also we didn't have to, you know, hire in any kit. We didn't have to pay for any kit. They all have it there. And for some mad reason that I will never understand, Adam lets me use all his kit for free at Aspect. On just any project I'm making. So that is a huge help. And I am very much aware of how lucky I am to have that. I had, like I said, £400. I think we spent far more on the festival circuit than we did on the actual production. But that was a case of, you know, my mum did the catering. We just kind of made friends at a local school and just said pretty please. And I think it's also about, it's working out what resources you've got. You know, we've got a school, we've got, you know, my friend's flat. Let's write the scenes for that then, you know, and let's see what actors are around who fancy coming along and getting involved. Okay, well, I'll create that part then and I'll write that scene for them and then we'll make this. And I actually quite like working that way. I think that kind of, you know, those restrictions can actually breed the creativity a lot of the time. And I think maybe that's having come from a producing background. I don't just write something and then, you know, throw it away to someone else to to make it happen.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm kind of always thinking with that head on. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Mm. I mean, I think all of that is fantastic. I mean, you do have to approach these things from a practical perspective as well as an emotionally cathartic perspective, as well as a creative perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the magic is kind of figuring out how to marry all of those things. And before I let you go, I'm afraid I'm going to have to drop on you the task of fixing the UK film industry. So,
oh, wow.
In terms of the major barriers that confront people who are trying to pursue a career in acting or are trying to get projects moving in a sustainable way so that they can keep doing the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yes.
What do you perceive to be the biggest barriers and how would you remove them?
Oh, geez. I mean, that's so unfair.
The whole problem, all yours, go ahead.
Yeah, great. Can't wait. I suppose it's so difficult, isn't it? Because it does so often come down to money. And like the last, I mean, I've had to have people work on my projects, you know, work in inverted commas for free because otherwise we wouldn't get them made. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I'm useless because, you know, as an actor, I never wanted to work on something for nothing because you're kind of, you know, that's drilled into you. You know,
it's
you are
trade.
Worthless. This is your career. You know, you shouldn't kind of, you know, devalue that. But I don't know. I just suppose it's people supporting each other. And like, I try and offer opportunities to, you know, young film students in Bristol. And then if they come back for the next shoot, give them a step up to the next role or, you know, an extra credit or something like that. So, I mean, that's a huge thing to ask. But I think maybe it's just being human about it, realizing, look, this is a hard industry, but we want to be nice to people. And we also just want, you know, we're doing this because we love it. So, just be a good person. I don't know. That really doesn't answer it at all. But
actually, I think you managed. I think you did. I think you did.
Really?
Essentially, if you're to boil down what you just said, I think you could probably boil it down right to community.
True.
In terms of, you know, you mentioned supporting one another, people that you don't necessarily want them to work for free. But as you said, if they don't, then it's difficult now and impossible to actually get your project made. And when you do, if people want to come back and move up to a more prominent spot, then you're willing to offer that to them. You respect their time, their craft, and what they bring to the table. And I think a lot of what makes film work in the kind of environment that we're in is feeling like you are appreciated, even if you're not necessarily paid. No one's going to dispute the fact that everybody should be being paid.
Of course.
But when you're creating that environment almost from nothing to make people feel a sense of ownership
in the project they're working on. That's a really good word. Yeah, ownership is great. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that probably helps in terms of things like representation as well, because you're not thinking with a sort of tunnel visioned commercial mind that says, okay, we need to have this kind of star, this kind of actor, tell this kind of story.
Exactly.
Because community is the focus of it, and your approach to making the film at all, you're more open to different types of stories and different types of people. And you know, you've got a good set of amazing films to show for it. So congratulations, and I really hope that continues for you.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you so much.
And thank you, audience, as well for tuning in for another episode. You can catch all of our previous episodes by going to cameolaunch.com/podcast. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many more. You can also catch our previous filmmaker interviews on our YouTube channel, so youtube.com/@cameolaunch. And just head to cameolaunch.com for our most up-to-date reviews of the best short films online. Thank you so much to you, Catherine, and thank you so much to the audience for joining us. Please stay tuned, stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.